Support for WKAR is provided by Liberty Coin Service, now open with a new location in Frandor, offering gold buying and coin collecting services in one combined location for more than 40 years. LibertyCoinService.com. And by MSU Federal Credit Union, providing credit union members with 24-hour account access online and now on your mobile internet. Insured by NCUA.
It's Current State for Monday, March 4th. Thanks very much for joining us. Coming up on today's show, the Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroad on the crazy Spartan loss in Ann Arbor yesterday. I finally get to meet State Rep Teresa Abid from the 71st District. Lots to discuss with her. MLive's Angela Whitrock on business and the economy and other money stuff, and lots more also coming up. It's also here, I think a thank you is in order here. I want to thank all of the Current State substitute hosts who filled in for me last week. I'm led to believe it went pretty well. So Scott Pohl, Peter Worf, Scott Westerman, Angela Whitrock, and Emmanuel Berry, big thanks. We've got a deep bench, fortunately, I think. That's a good feeling. But anyway, coming up first on today's show, from discussions about Medicaid expansion to planning for the new insurance exchanges, to Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan's impending shift in status to Obamacare, the state's health care system is about to undergo some major changes. But just what all of this means for both insurers and consumers remains pretty unclear here at the beginning of March. So here to help us shed a little light on what's in store for Michigan's health care system is Lonnie Scott, who's a spokesperson for the consumer advocacy group Know Your Care, and Rick Murdoch is director of the Michigan Association of Health Plans. And we want to thank both of you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
It seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, because that's quite likely here when we're talking about health care, but it seems to me there are three focal points to our discussion this morning. One is the state's Blue Cross Blue Shield reform. The second would be the Affordable Care Act, which is beginning to have an impact. And the other is the sequester's impact on health care. Can we look at the big forces as those three forces, Rick Murdoch?
I believe we can. We can just start to scratch the surface because this is such a transformational period in our industry, and the sequestration just makes it even more complex.
Yeah. Lonnie, is that an appropriate way to look at this discussion?
It's a fair analysis, and I agree with Richard. We'll just be able to scratch the surface.
Okay, we'll try to go slowly here, so hopefully our listeners will be better informed at the end of the discussion than they are right now. Let's start with the Blue Cross Blue Shield change in status. Rick Murdoch, what does that mean for Michiganians?
Well, it changes the whole way that Blue Cross Blue Shield will be regulated in the state of Michigan. They have previously, as of today, and still are, regulated under a statute that's Public Act 350. They're not under the insurance code, and what this intends to do, this is legislation, just so everyone's aware, passed the House last week, and will be sent to the Senate for their concurrence, which we assume they'll do, and then on to the governor for his approval later this month. And this will transform Blue Cross from a nonprofit corporation to a nonprofit mutual and regulate them under the insurance code. Their position and the intent of the governor was to create a level playing field so all insurance companies are regulated in the same way, the same format, same filings. And along the way, some of the previous preferential treatment that Blue Cross Blue Shield had is now going to be eliminated, including their taxation. They'll now be taxed as other companies. And, if you will, the price for this to the state is a annual contribution from Blue Cross to a new nonprofit health and wellness fund that will support various health initiatives over the next 16 to 18 years.
Okay. And we expect the current legislation to pass and to be signed into law by the governor.
It did pass the House last week. The Senate action will be simply to concur with the House action. We believe that'll occur. As you recall, this was legislation that was passed last December, and the governor vetoed it due to some language dealing with the inclusion of some abortion language. As it came back through the legislature early this year, that language was removed. And right now we believe it'll be concurred by the Senate and the governor will approve it.
Lonnie Scott, any comments regarding the impact of Blue Cross Blue Shield reform on the average Michiganian?
I, to be completely honest, haven't followed the legislation as closely as Richard has, but I believe that they did change the legislation to bring it to a better place than it was originally as passed. So I believe that just like all of these pieces of legislation, you're going to see a huge impact on consumers, and it's definitely something that's going to affect Michigan families.
Rick Murdoch.
Yeah, just a couple points, and then time will tell whether the legislation has any overall impact. There are key issues from our point of view that were included in the legislation that I think people were following. That one was a restriction and then an outright ban on the use of most favored nation clauses. This is an issue that currently Blue Cross is in litigation with the U.S. Department of Justice for some anti-competitive issues. We'll see how that goes with this legislation. And the other was language that will address the issue of cost shifting, and that is their history of not paying their fair share of the underfunding of Medicaid and Medicare, and that cost is shifted by providers than to other payers. We're looking for a level playing field. Our association represents other insurance carriers.
Right.
So we're looking for a level playing field across the board. So we believe this legislation addresses those competitive issues. And then we always have to remember, they have 70% of the market. So this legislation hopefully will address that competitiveness for Michigan.
Is the Blue Cross Blue Shield piece part of the health care exchange? Those are related in that it will become a part of a health care.
Sure.
That'll be an option on the health care exchange, correct?
Well, one of the reasons for the legislation was to permit, if you will, enable Blue Cross to position themselves to be part of the insurance exchange, much like any other insurance company. Those decisions have to be made over the next literally 60 days in terms of qualifying, meeting the criteria for being on the insurance exchange in Michigan. So having the legislation enacted enables them to do it in probably an easier manner than they could have otherwise.
The sequester has really thrown an awful lot of confusion into the mix here as well. Let's move on to that federal piece and update, if we can, the impact of the sequester. Last week, the Federal Health and Human Services Department said that on Friday, last Friday, the agency would be sending out information on what exactly is likely to be cut. Lonnie Scott here as of Monday morning. Is that any clearer?
I don't believe it's any clearer as far as the specifics. We do know the amount that's going to be cut, and the White House has put out some numbers on where they expect these programs, the hits that they expect these programs to take based on the overall number of cuts. So we know that the Health and Human Services Department specifically will take about a $15.5 billion cut, with two-thirds of that amount coming from the Medicare program, which services the disabled and the elderly.
Right.
So we know that that's a pretty large proportion. But there are a number of other cuts that are coming as a part of the sequester. Things that will be affected are, especially for places like here, like MSU, are things like research in the healthcare area. So vaccine development, looking at cures for things like influenza or different types of vaccines like that. Alzheimer's disease, cancer, those different types of things that are researched, what we're going to see is about a $1.6 billion cut from the National Institute for Health, which does all of this types of research. So we know that this is going to have a huge impact on a wide variety of areas within healthcare. And actually, the sequester hits healthcare as a whole. There is nothing that takes a bigger hit than healthcare except for defense
military
spending.
And is Michigan particularly vulnerable in any way due to the Medicare cuts, or is this equally shared pain?
It's equally shared pain, but Michigan certainly takes a number of hits as far as healthcare is concerned, along with Medicare. Public health and all of those things are going to impact the state. I don't know that Michigan takes any bigger of a hit than any other state, but every state is going to take a very large hit from the sequester.
Rick, Lonnie's studied the impact of the sequester. He follows it a little bit more closely than you do, but anything to say about the sequester and its impact?
Well, I think it just adds to some of the rationale and discussion that we're going to have on Medicaid expansion. You know, we'd like to see that everything sort of, you hold everything constant and move these programs forward, but we have so many balls in the air.
Yes.
That's going on. And when we have a current budget issue in Michigan, the Governor Snyder's executive budget made a recommendation for Medicaid expansion. One of the reasons that a number of organizations are supporting it, including our organization, and I'd say the hospitals as well, is the cuts or reductions in reimbursement and special financing that are taking place are ready and planned under ACA. And then to add to that, the cuts that we're now going to see with sequestration in Medicare just adds fuel to the need to, if you will, to make up some of the difference with Medicaid expansion.
Well, it was my impression that the medical community in general was behind the Affordable Care Act. Are they still, where do they stand here with regard to the Medicare cuts?
You know, I can't speak for the hospital industry, but I'm very confident that they are very concerned about the sequestration cuts. They saw and they knew the cuts coming under ACA, but that was also part of the formula that you make up that difference with providing increased coverage through Medicaid expansion and through the coverage of folks in the insurance exchange. You're bringing people who are uninsured into coverage, and that provides coverage for hospital expenses as well as other expenses. And the thinking is, if you do that, then the federal government needs to reimburse less with some of the special disproportionate share hospital payments and other payments. So, you know, it was a balancing act, and then to cut on top of that just adds a little bit of anxiety, I think, for our hospital friends.
I would imagine. It sounds like a massive collision of bureaucracies. It sounds messy. How will Michigan citizens be made aware of new laws, new regulations, new services? Lonnie?
Well, I think that's an interesting point, and I think the problem is, and that's where we largely failed with the Affordable Care Act, is that in every other major piece of legislation, when you talked about things like Medicare Part D and all of those other major things, there was money put into the budget for those bills that allowed for each congressional member to go back to their district and do an education program. And with the ACA, that didn't happen. So education has been largely by private groups, and that's why it's hard to get accurate information. So the group that I've been working with, Know Your Care, for the past year and a half, have been going around and talking to different constituencies about the things that are contained in the ACA. And unfortunately, it's going to be left up to people like us, organizations that are going to go out and have these forums. One of the big ones here in the state of Michigan as well is the Michigan Consumers for Healthcare. They're a broad coalition that has also been doing some education. But it's really going to rely on those types of people, folks like myself and Richard coming on radio programs like this to really provide details.
Rick, is your organization involved in just disseminating important information?
We're trying to do as much as we can. Once we have more information, I think part of this is timing. There's a lot of information we don't know, so it's very difficult to bring consumers awareness of what they need to have in play before October 1st.
A lot of that's the sequestration, correct? I mean, we're still waiting for an awful lot of information from the feds.
Well, just on sequestration itself, I'm talking literally about some of the other issues that we already have to deal with, and that's the Affordable Care Act, that's dealing with the insurance exchange, and then to throw Medicaid expansion on top of that. We have a lot of issues that are going to be effective October 1st of this year. October 1st. So from the insurance and health insurance industry perspective, we've got a lot in front of us. And we know very well from polling that we've done that consumers don't have a very good understanding of the various nuances on the insurance exchange. Mm-hmm. And the legislature, if you will, failed to take action last year to have a state-administered insurance exchange.
Yes.
And this year, we're going through some additional legislation, at least to help support the partnership model. That was the default. If the state didn't have a state-administered program, then—
We work with the feds.
Then you work with the feds, and you can either default completely to the federal government or maintain some responsibility. Michigan chose to maintain responsibility for plan management, which we believe is good. They'll make decisions about who's on the exchange, who's not, and some of the other regulation.
Okay.
And then they'll do consumer outreach. But they can't do consumer outreach until some of this other information is
planned. Gotcha.
So they will be the point in state government for a lot of the information. But they'll depend on groups like Lonnie's and ours and other consumer groups to get the word out.
Lonnie Scott is a spokesperson for the consumer advocacy group Know Your Care. Rick Murdoch, who you were just listening to, is the director of the Michigan Association of Health Plans. Thank you both for joining me today, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Current State on 90.5 WKAR, I'm Mark Bayshore. Well, it may be hard to believe, but evidence suggests many otherwise benign, everyday items like flip-flops and drinking straws and neckties pose serious dangers. Other reputable data point to the health risks involved in common activities like flossing our teeth and washing our hands and eating leafy greens. Writer Christopher Cerf and his partner Henry Beard has chronicled, like never before, all of these disturbing but often absurd dangers. Cerf is the co-author of Encyclopedia Paranoica, which he claims, quote, might just save your life, but probably won't. Welcome, Chris Cerf.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I am well. It's great to have you on board here. I stumbled onto your book at Schuller Books here in Okemos, and I had to get you on the show. I have to read a passage from the flyer of your book. The back jacket describes Encyclopedia Paranoica as the definitive compendium of things you absolutely, positively must not eat, drink, wear, take, grow, make, buy, use, do, permit, believe, or let yourself be exposed to, including an awful lot of toxic, lethal, horrible stuff that you thought was safe, good, or healthy. This suggests kind of an ongoing state of alarm. Are you naturally this kind of person, Chris Cerf, a neurotic worry wart?
Well, I am now, Mark. Henry Beard and I were not this way until we started researching this book, but we got more and more horrified the more work we did.
Was there a moment reading a health warning or something that triggered the thought, hey, we've got a book here?
Absolutely. More the thought was a book is necessary to keep it all straight, because all the advice, which is all based on scientific research, all that advice is totally contradictory. What really got us started, to answer your question, was an article that appeared on the internet, where we found a lot of this stuff, of course, about macular degeneration, the eye problem. There was a doctor in Australia who runs the Macular Degeneration Foundation there, who discovered that carrots caused macular degeneration. Therefore, carrots were bad for your eyes, not good for your eyes, and should be avoided at all costs. So that sort of rang a bell with us that we better look into it further. And the minute that I did, I read more from the doctor in Australia, who said that instead of carrots, we should eat spinach to make our eyes better, since spinach has lutein in it, but no dangerous beta carotenes. But unfortunately, we then found a doctor in London who said that spinach was terrible for you. Because spinach has a kind of acid in it, oxalic acid, that leaches the calcium out of your bones. So this doctor said, no more spinach, use dairy products instead. But of course, dairy products have lots of fat in them and cause your cholesterol counts to go up and all kinds of other horrible things. So there's no way out.
This brings to mind one of your previous books. I don't think it was written with Henry Beard, but it was about the all of the expert disagreement that exists in the world, right?
That's absolutely right. Victor Navasky from The Nation magazine and I have done a couple of editions of a book called The Experts Speak.
That's right.
Where we collected quotes from experts in the world on every subject throughout history, all of whom turned out to be completely wrong. And this project is very connected to that one because all these experts are contradictory, if not wrong.
You chronicle five, five separate risks to health due to flip-flops. You claim that Today Show reporter Laura Coffey includes the possibility of death as one of them. They're unhealthy because, well, here are the five reasons. You tend to scrunch your toes, and when you repeat that, long-term ankle and hip problems may result. Two.
Terrible.
No arch support. Three, toes and feet are exposed and easily stepped on. Four, melanoma, sunburn due to exposure of the tops of the feet. That can be very painful. And five, they're apparently covered in bacteria. How has American society remained safe in light of the flip-flop danger here?
Well, I think, Mark, the only way it has is because everybody doesn't wear flip-flops every minute. If we all did, we'd be doomed. Sorry to have to be the bearer of ill tidings here all the time, but that's my role.
The book is an especially rich storehouse of alarm for any germaphobe. There are a lot of entries along the lines of this one, summarizing the risks of being treated by nurses with artificial nails. And this is from the Ann Arbor Veterans Hospital just down the road.
Yes, I was going to say that's right from your home state.
Yeah. 73% of the nurses with fake nails had harmful pathogens present on their nails, compared with only 32% of nurses with native nails. And even after washing with an antimicrobial soap, the fake nail wearers continued to be more likely, by 68% to 22%, to be harboring dangerous microbes and yeasts. There are germs everywhere. That is probably one of the biggest takeaways from your book.
Well, that's true. And, of course, the good advice about the artificial nails is if you're in the emergency room, even if you think you're having a heart attack or something, and the nurse that comes out to greet you is wearing artificial nails, you better get out of there.
It seems to me there is a great deal of perfectly logical advice about the risks of ordinary activities and objects in your book, but there is something about 380 pages of them that makes you never want to take another sensible precaution for the rest of your life. You can only laugh when all of this is presented in front of you.
Well, that's what we're hoping, of course. I guess you could say Encyclopedia Paranoica, even though it's very useful, is a work of satire. And I think we just realize that the media has kind of gone overboard reporting every incredible danger every day because it makes for good headlines, whereas saying, you know, spinach is pretty good for you is not a big news story.
Right. What's the response to the book been? I mean, who exactly do you hear from after you write a book like this?
Well, the gamut is wide. There are a lot of people who take it very seriously and then get mad at us and say, you know, that we made it all up, which we didn't, by the way. Every single item in this book is carefully footnoted to prove that somebody said it. And usually it's research people who probably got money for the research, perhaps from companies that might have some interest in the results. For example, a lot of the germ stuff, a lot of the research we have there was financed by the Clorox company. So, of course, they have some interest in scaring you to death so you'll buy more bleach. But, of
right.
course, the soap people say that the bleach is dangerous and you should use soap instead. In fact, there are two rival doctors, in a sense, who completely agree about the danger. One at NYU and one at the University of Arizona, but the Arizona guy thinks you should use bleach, and the New York guy thinks you should use soap. So guess who funded whom?
Yeah. Well, writer Christopher Cerf and his partner Henry Beard are co-authors of Encyclopedia Paranoica. It might just save your life, but probably won't. Thanks, Chris Cerf.
Thank you, Mark. This was fun.
It's Current State, 90.5 WKAR. Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. We have been diligently interviewing our new local state representatives here since the election, since the beginning of the year. And today we spent some time with Teresa Abid. Last November, Teresa defeated one-term representative Deb Shaughnessy, moving the 71st district in Eaton County from Republican to Democratic. She's been assigned to the Education, Insurance, and Regulatory Reform Committees. And I'm delighted to finally be able to meet you.
Thank you.
Belated congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You were assigned to the Education, Insurance, and Regulatory Reform Committees. Were you happy with those assignments?
Very happy. When I found out the three committees I was on, we had some say, but you never know what committees you're going to be placed on. But education, of course, is one of the primary ones. I've been in our schools for over 30 years, so I really feel like some of the problems we have with some of the legislation that's gone through is because it's being enacted by people that don't really get it, that haven't been in our schools. So I think I'm going to bring a real voice of reason and reality to this topic. It's a big topic.
Were you a teacher, a counselor, an administrator, what?
I was a school social worker for 33 years. So I've been in many of the communities that I serve right now. So I've been in Grand Ledge, Eaton Rapids, Charlotte. So I know the community very well. I also had spent some time in the Lansing schools. So I really have my finger on the pulse of what's happening in education and what the needs are, and I don't think that's being reflected right now in legislation.
Between education and insurance, you have really been busy because the Blue Cross Blue Shield and everything going down just on those two committees I would think would be plenty to keep you busy.
Yes, because with education, it's going to be soon. The EAA will be coming up again, the Education Achievement Authority. I'm very worried about that and worried about the dismantling of our public schools, which I think is happening. And I am committed to our public schools. I feel like it's the cornerstone of our democracy, and we need to make sure that it's not destroyed. And on top of that, with insurance, with the Blue Cross Blue Shield, I know No Fault will be coming up. So very hot topics that really are going to shape the future. So they're very important topics.
I heard this morning that Senator Whitmer's Michigan 2020 plan, you're nodding your head,
yes.
You're familiar with
yes,
that plan.
I am.
Is that going to be put back on the table this week? I'm led to believe it was.
Yeah,
I
have not heard when it's going to be put on, but I'm very excited to hear that it is because I know it was on the table last term too. Anything to help our students be able to afford college. I think what's deplorable is that when we keep saying everyone needs to take the classes and be ready for college and then not give them the means to go there, we need to make sure that we connect those dots and help them be able to go to college.
You are one of only a couple of mid-Michigan reps and senators, though, to vote against
yes.
the measure to restructure Blue Cross Blue Shield, you and Rep. Tom Cochran. Tell us why.
One of the things that I'm very glad about is that I was able to sit on that committee. So I was able to hear and listen intently to not only what was presented in the committee, but also I met with groups from both sides. So I really thoroughly investigated and got thorough knowledge of what the issue is. And I was not satisfied at all that our seniors are being protected. The Medigap coverage is only guaranteed to be there at the rate it is right now for 5 years. After that, Blue Cross Blue Shield does not have to offer it, and if they do, the prices could go up. I feel like our seniors already have been bombarded with the senior pension tax, with rising costs. They're barely able to make it on their fixed incomes, and I am not willing to let them be at risk of not being able to afford their health care. And with Medigap, that is not going to be on the health exchange. This is something that is something that's apart from that. And if our seniors can't afford it, there's going to be a huge gap in coverage. And I am not willing to put them at risk that they will not be cared for.
Not as great a concern, though, for Andy Shore or Sam Singh, fellow Democrats.
Right. And I think they're looking at they have different perspectives. They're looking at it as that it's going to give tax revenue, which it is. So there's a plus that now Blue Cross Blue Shield will be paying taxes. However, I'm concerned about the added element, which I am not secure that our seniors will be taken care of in the long term. And I feel that we have to really look at not only short term, but also the long term repercussions and making sure we have the safety standards in place that our seniors are going to be taken care of. And I don't really feel comfortable that they are.
We're talking with Democratic State Rep. Teresa Abbott. The stage is apparently set this week for an alternative road funding plan coming from the legislature, coming from House Democrats, if I'm not mistaken. Tim Grimal's behind this? Is
well,
that right?
Well, I know there's one being placed on the floor from the Republicans, but I am not aware of what Minority Leader Grimal is putting on the floor.
Okay, but there is another plan involving a bump in the state sales tax, I want to say. Do I have that right?
I hate to say because I'm not real sure about what's going to be proposed.
Well, tell us what you make of the governor's road funding
plan. I would love to. One of the things that I'm doing, one of my strong commitments is communication with the public. And I've done that in a variety of ways. And one is the ongoing coffees, but also articles in the paper, in addition to reaching out at our office. But one of the things I've come through loud and clear, where the connection is here, is that I have heard over and over, loud and clear, that people do not want an increase in the registration fees. They said what will happen is that they'll only be able to afford one car, that they will have to actually try to get by as a family on one, or they won't be able to afford it, and people will be driving around without getting their registrations updated. And also the gas hike. People can hardly afford gas as it is. So it's really going to hurt people being able to go to their place of employment. It's going to help hurt car sales. It's just not productive. And it's, again, hitting the middle class. We have to look at other ways of funding our roads, which is needs to be a priority, but not on the backs of our middle class, which has already been hit.
What other ways?
There are many other ways. In fact, that is what the Democrats will be bringing up, that we are coming up with a list of many other alternatives. And I think one of them, let me give you just a short example, even for the gas hike, diesel was going to have to pay one-third of the cost that consumers are going to have to pay on their cars. Somehow that seems to be backwards. It's the trucks that are causing the most damage to our roads. We also need to look at how can we get revenue from trucks that are coming in from other states. There are places, other states that really have a lot more revenue coming in from that and have very innovative ways of getting that. So I think there's many ways that we need to look at getting revenue without placing it squarely on the shoulders of our workers and families who are struggling.
How do you feel about your party's new leader, Lon Johnson?
You know, what I'm glad about is that we are now united. I think that was something where I really respect Mark Brewer, and I know Lon Johnson has many things that he can offer to the party. Mark Brewer, I want to thank him for his 18 years of service. And it was great that he wanted the party to be unified. And so he chose to step back before votes were taken, and we all are united and moving forward. But I want to make sure that I thank Mark for his leadership, and we're now ready to get behind Lon Johnson.
Did you feel it was time for a change?
I'm not sure. I did not make a commitment in this particular area because I felt that there was assets on both sides. I felt Mark Brewer had the historical perspective, and he had a lot that he had offered the party. So I think both have their own strengths that they can give to the party.
Last week, the House, where you serve, voted 78-31 to accept $31 million in federal funds to set up a state federal partnership health exchange. Explain your vote, please.
Yes, I am excited that we made that move because even the Republicans were stated, we are down that path. The car is moving down that path, and we can either be the driver in the car or we can be a passenger that has no control. And I think by accepting the federal money to help this be a viable program and not put so much on the state and have a say in what we're going to do, I think that was a good move for us.
Are you confident Democrats can unseat Rick Snyder next year?
Yes. I think there's...
With whom?
That is the good question. I don't think anyone has come out in the very front. I think there's a lot of people interested, but I don't see a front runner at this point. But I think that one of the things with Governor Snyder is that he's proven that what his word is not something that he keeps. Things that he will say then he goes back on. And I think also he's been representing more of the corporations rather than the working people in Michigan. And I think we really need someone that's really going to help the middle class workers and help create jobs and put the focus on where it really needs to be. His focus has been not on the job creation and on our middle class.
Tell us about this Capital Caucus that you're a member of. I mean, this is Whitmer, Jones, Singh, Shore, yourself, Tom Cochran.
Yes, it's wonderful. I think one of the things people hunger for are a bipartisanship. And so this is a group that gets together to talk about what can we do for our area and how can we support business, small business, what can we do to enhance the capital area, and which includes, you know, Lansing and East Lansing and Grand Lodge. So I think it's great. We have great discussions. We've been touring different places, and we're going to be working together, which is something people don't see much nowadays.
Democrat Teresa Abbott represents the 71st State House District in Eaton County. Nice to have you in here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, it was a tough day yesterday for the Spartans in Ann Arbor as we had to leave town with a one-point loss at the hands of the University of Michigan. And here to discuss that and the road ahead, it's the Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroad. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, Mark. Yeah, it was another very close game and tough loss for Michigan State yesterday, obviously.
There are a lot of things to look at. I don't think I'll remember the last few minutes of a game all season that went quite as crazy. And not to take anything away from the comeback, because in the end, Michigan State did close the gap and made it a game until the very end. But it was not pretty, those final minutes for MSU. We had missed layups, missed open men.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you said. I mean, for one thing, it looked like with about 4 minutes to go that I think Michigan may have been one basket away from really kind of just putting it away, and you know, the last few minutes would have been meaningless. But all of a sudden, Michigan State, after really being outplayed most of that second half, had a really amazing run. I mean, you think about it; they had a chance to shoot for the last shot, and then one of those plays that will always be remembered. I mean, in this game, you know, those like the Kalen Lucas shot from a couple of years ago, and I remember a Ramil Robinson shot long ago, and Mateen Cleaves 20 assists. I mean, this Trey Burke steal of Keith Appling will be one of those things that is always brought up when this game happens.
What more can – I mean, did you see Burke do anything more that you hadn't already seen him do yesterday? I mean, he was fantastic.
He was. You know, the thing, it's funny because he had 21 points, and I didn't think watching the game like, wow, Trey Burke is playing a great game. I thought actually Keith Appling, when he wasn't in foul trouble, did a pretty good job of, you know, defending him. He mostly had to make, mid-range jump shots. Michigan didn't have a three-point basket in the entire game, which is an amazing stat in itself. I mean, I think if you told Michigan State Michigan will go 0 for 12 from 3 today, they would have said, okay, well, we'll win by 15, you know. Trey Burke, he was always there. He kept things in control. He ran the team. And then, of course, you know, the steal at the end. And another steal, of course, on the last possession when Michigan State had one more chance to try to win the game.
What does this loss, along with the other recent losses, do to the to just the postseason mindset? Are we going to be able to put these behind us? Does this team have the ability to put them behind it and not be terribly affected by it?
Well, that's a good question. Past Michigan State teams have made runs after disappointing finishes either to the regular season or, you know, in the Big Ten tournament. And of course, this team was already talking a little bit about the Big Ten tournament and hoping to play Michigan again after the game yesterday. But a lot is going to be told this week. I mean, Michigan State really needs to win these two games and do something in Chicago. And if I just think it's very important for Michigan State to be able to play at the Palace of Auburn Hills in the first weekend. And that has looked like almost a lock for a few weeks now, and now I would say it's in a little bit of jeopardy. But if Michigan State is a 3 seed or better in the NCAA tournament, then it should be able to play at the Palace. And, that's a big advantage. You're going to have a lot of your fans there. And I think you don't have to go on a big trip. I think it increases the chances of advancing to the next weekend. And, you win one game in the NCAA tournament, everything that happened before that really doesn't matter. I mean, you're focused in, and obviously Tom Izzo has a great formula for advancing in that tournament. So I would still look at this team and say good chance for a postseason run, but a few individuals have to come along. Brandon Dawson has kind of faded, and Keith Appling, actually I thought played a lot better yesterday, didn't hit his shots, but the question is emotionally, does he get over that? Because that's, you can tell after the game, obviously it hit him very hard.
Twice a week, the Detroit Free Press's Joe Rexroad is an important contributor to Current State here on WKAR. Joe, have a great day. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Mark. You too.
MLive's Angela Whitrock joins Current State every Monday morning to stir up area business and the economy and other money stuff. And I'm just back from Mexico, so everything is news to me this morning, even more so than usual. I gather you were among the first, and possibly the first, to report on the tax dollars that the city of Lansing will be getting out of the Blue Cross Blue Shield bill. And that is some serious bucks, right?
Yes, it's going to be about $600,000 annually. Originally, that tax money wasn't set to come online until 2015. But Andy Shore, our state rep here in Lansing, actually introduced an amendment to the Blue Cross Blue Shield legislation, which is basically turning that entity from a nonprofit into a different type of tax-paying nonprofit. And what happened was there was an inadvertent oversight, they say, that allowed the company to continue to not pay taxes for an additional year.
Yeah.
Shore's amendment fixed that. So now in Lansing, where there's a BCBS building on South Capitol Ave, the city will now be able to draw $600,000 annually in property taxes from that. So that is, for a city like Lansing, that's always looking for extra change, that's a huge chunk of change.
Have city officials specifically responded to that?
They haven't yet, but I imagine that if and when they do, they will answer that they're pleased.
We got to talk about one other important Michigan company. I hear CompuWare, which plays a really significant role in the Detroit and the Southeast Michigan economy, is unfortunately planning to cut jobs. What's going on?
Well, what we're hearing is that CompuWare plans to lay off more than 150 employees. This is part of a larger strategy to save about $60 million in the next 3 years, which is clearly not insignificant. They're going to do that partly by saving $23 million over the next 12 to 18 months. It's going to cost them, actually, $25 million or so to make these cost-cutting measures due to severance packages and whatnot. But, between the layoffs and their plans to reduce or close office space in 16 different facilities, they're hoping to save $60 million. So, it's going to be interesting to watch. CompuWare, as you mentioned, is huge. They're founded by Pete Carmanos, who also founded the Carmanos Cancer Institute. He owns a professional hockey team. And they're huge in Detroit in terms of, alongside Dan Gilbert, really rebuilding the downtown.
Yeah. Is their business slowing down, though? Is it a sales thing? Is it what's behind the need to cut jobs? Do we know?
They weren't specific, but I sense that what we're seeing in the software hardware industry is sort of the same thing that we're seeing in a lot of other industries. Technology makes things more efficient, and so everyone is transitioning in their own industries away from the way that they've been doing things to some way that sort of encompasses and accounts for all of these new efficiencies that sometimes result in folks losing their jobs.
Okay. Are they a hardware or a software or both?
I believe it's software, but it was not clear completely to me in the story.
Okay. I did manage to see really good U.S. auto sales numbers from February before this morning. What were the highlights and how are they being interpreted?
Well, this is the 12th straight month that domestic auto sales, which includes the big three and non-domestic automakers, so this is all units sold in the U.S., for the 12th straight month, those cleared a million, which is huge because that's a sign that the economy is rebounding, that folks are buying cars. They say it's due to pent-up demand. You know, for a long time, folks were sort of making do with what they had, whether it was fitting their needs or not because they couldn't afford a new vehicle. So now folks are sort of upgrading. Their loosening credit market is helping folks to be able to afford new cars. So this is great news, obviously. This is a 4% increase since February of 2012. 1.2 million units were sold in the U.S. in February. So you imagine 1.2 million new cars on the road in February this year. And that's, again, 12 straight months now. The last time that we were under a million cars sold in the U.S. was January 2012. So this is, you know, good, consistent growth for the U.S. auto market.
How did GM do? Did they look especially good? Were they about average? What?
The big three combined, so that would be GM, Chrysler, and Ford, they combined for almost 560,000 units sold. So they're right around half of the market share when you put them all together, and they're all hovering around between 14 and 18% of market share. So that's pretty good when you consider the struggles of at least two of the big three in the last few years.
Did Lansing made cars fare pretty well?
I didn't see a specific breakout, but I have read that it's been difficult to keep up with demand for some of the newer models. So hopefully what that means is that Lansing made cars like the Traverse and the ATS will be increasing and driving that demand.
Yeah. And I see I do beg your pardon, the Lansing State Journal is putting its building up for sale. Where are they going? Are they moving?
You know, nobody knows yet. They mentioned, well, first of all, kudos to the City Pulse. They broke the story on Thursday afternoon. The LSJ then obviously had the best story with all the details on Thursday evening. And what they say is that the building is too big for their present operations. They've got about 150 or so employees there. But they simply don't need as much space as they used to, partly because they make a different product than they used to.
Sure.
So the building is assessed at about $1 million. It's huge. It's right downtown, and it's on the market now, or it will be on the market shortly. But it sounds like what the LSJ plans is to stay there until it sells. And then, like the Free Press, which is also a Gannett-owned company, they're hoping to downsize into newer modern spaces, like a lot of digital focused media companies are.
You can only imagine how many fewer employees there are inside that building, certainly in terms of reporting. I don't know about administration or otherwise, but
right. Yeah, there's there have been some interesting numbers coming out recently about the employee cutting at Gannett specifically. There's a wonderful blog called Gannett Blog that just follows this company, probably with some former employees tipping them off, but you know, it does appear that they lost around 2,300 employees from community newspapers in the last year, and that was sort of a difficult figure to get at, but it does speak to the same challenges that, you know, every news organization is having, which is how do you deliver a digital product and still make enough money to pay your quality staff?
And what are you working on, briefly, this week at MLive?
Goodness gracious. Well, we just heard this morning that the Lansing Mayor Virge Bernero plans to appoint a new city attorney, so we'll have that up this afternoon. I'll be following gas prices, wrapping up some best things to do in Lansing, just chock full of all kinds of good stuff for you this week.
All right. Very good. And you enjoyed hosting?
I loved hosting. Keep that seat open for me, Mark.
MLive's Angela Whitrock joins us to talk about business and the economy every Monday morning here on Current State. Thanks, Angela.
My pleasure.
We'll be back here tomorrow on Current State. I hope you can join us then. And we want to thank Aaron Young, who's our engineer. Joe Lindstroth is our producer. Our executive producer is Peter Wharf. Thanks to Gary Reed and all of the other very talented Current State contributors, Kevin Lavery, Scott Pohl, and Melissa Benmark. I'm Mark Bayshore. This is Current State on 90.5 WKAR.
Support for WKAR is provided by Liberty Coin Service, now open with a new location in Frandor, offering gold buying and coin collecting services in one combined location for more than 40 years. LibertyCoinService.com. And by MSU Alumni Association, offering opportunities for networking, career services, and community involvement with MSU alumni in your area and across the country. Alumni.msu.edu.